I'd like to begin by saying, fuck Lance Armstrong. Fuck him and his balls and his bicycles and his steroids and his yellow shirts and the dumb, empty expression on his face. I'm tired of that asshole. And while you're at it, fuck Tiger Woods, too. There's another jack-off I can do without. I'm tired of being told who to admire in this country. Aren't you sick of being told who your heroes ought to be? Being told who you ought to be looking up to. I'll choose my own heroes, thank you very much. And fuck Dr. Phil, too.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry.
Larry. The immortal George Carlin. Well, he was not immortal, but his humor is. But that's neither here nor there. What's interesting about that clip is that the number two guy on Carlin's list, Tiger Woods, has made a spectacular comeback. He just won the Masters tournament, his first major win since 08. 11 years is a hell of a slump, but the question is, will his image be refurbished and restored? I really don't understand why his career was shattered to begin with. Back when Tiger was hot, really hot, people were getting singed just being in his zip code, on top of not only his game, but pretty much the whole damn planet. Money raining down on him, along with fame, adulation, and women. His earnings soon surpassed $1 billion, and it looked as if it would never end until one night he crashed his Escalade into a tree near his Florida estate. This is where the passage of a decade has blurred some details. I distinctly recall tabloids at that time reporting that Tiger's wife had discovered he was screwing around with another chick named Rachel Uchitel. Rachel was a hostess at a joint in Vegas, and Mrs. Woods went after her straying husband with a 9-iron and worked his face like she was trying to dig out of a sand trap. But you won't find that on Wikipedia. Seems that that has been sanitized. Mostly, you find the official statement that wife, Ellen Nordegren, heroically ran to Tiger's rescue, finding him unconscious in the car and smashed out the window of the golf club to extricate him from it. Only Tiger and Ellen know where the truth lies, but is that really important? When you think of all the other big-time athletes smeared by scandal, Tiger's transgressions were trifles. You like that alliteration? So do I. So, suddenly, product endorsements disappeared, his game went to shit, and Tiger was more of a sad cat than a feline force to be reckoned with. Another broken icon on the ash heap of greatness gone by. But Tiger is back, which may say more about his mettle as a competitor and a man than all the trophies, tournaments, and purses he's ever won. What makes some people able to recover and bounce back from adversity, while others just wither and hide? Few of us are global celebrities, but all of us have setbacks. Some can be devastating. How do we get past them and rebuild ourselves? Some people do that well enough to make Nietzsche proud. They emerge stronger, become steel, forged by fire and failure. What is their secret? Wouldn't it be great to know it? I'll circle back to that a little later in the show, but right now, let's have a look at some other crash and burn celebrities. Do they sometimes set themselves up for it? Well, Carlin's first mention sure did. Maybe Lance Armstrong's parents had a hand in his undoing. These fucking cartoon names almost guarantee trouble. Yeah, let's name our kid after a medieval weapon, which will go great with our last name, Armstrong. No pressure there, Lance. Why do people tag their kids with the names of artillery, demigods, and superheroes? It's kind of crazy. It's never about the kid. It's about mommy and daddy showing all the other trendy mommies and daddies how clever they can be. Now what about that doll-eyed schmoof, Lance? The guy was doping his blood and lying in everybody's face about it for years. And while I was never mad about Tiger's ensembles, those racing bike outfits with the dick helmets are just ridiculous. But fashion aside, there will be no comeback for Lance. Tiger wisely plays a game, golf is not a sport, where even old guys can win. Armstrong won't be winning any bike races. Carlin used another word we should probably look at, hero. Along with genius, hero has become one of the most overused words in our culture. Why the fuck should any professional athlete be considered a hero? A hero is somebody that does something heroic, leaping on a hand grenade, or running into a burning building to rescue someone, or killing commies. That's a hero. But doing something you love and making elephant bucks while you do it? That's heroic? Please. Some people like to call them role models. That's another stupid term. Who is truly worthy of being a role model, huh? Pretty much everyone on the planet is an asshole, at one time or another. I remember baseball slugger Mark McGwire's fall from grace. It was over the use of steroids, which, to his credit, he admitted, unlike Lancey Poo. And one day as McGwire left the field, some angry fan daddy accosted him over that, saying, "How could you do this? You're my son's role model." And McGwire gave the perfect retort to this idiot. "Hey man, why aren't you your son's role model?" Why should people give a shit whether athletes take steroids? They're entertainers. Did anybody care that Keith Richards shot heroin? Why don't they just have two leagues for everything? Just slap the letters DS for drug-soaked in front of whatever league it is, NFL, NBA, NHL, and let not only the players but the fans abuse whatever substance they choose as well. How cool would a hockey game be with a fog of hash smoke covering the ice? They could set up a psychedelic light show and pound trance music over the rink. It would be fun if some players just said, fuck the puck, and started figure skating instead, huh? Imagine Sidney Crosby dropping his stick to do a triple axle. Probably be a lot fewer fights, not so much blood on the ice. And then on alternate nights, have the squeaky clean all-family game for that crowd. Seems like an easy fix. Everybody's happy. We have these weird contradictions and double and triple standards about our celebrities and what they can and cannot do, don't we? Kim Kardashian does a sex tape, so we make her a TV star and a billionaire and a cultural icon. Pee Wee Herman plays with himself alone in a dark theater, gets arrested, and loses his career. Marilyn Manson's music was falsely credited with inspiring the Columbine Killers, and that shut down his career. Charles Manson had 7 people killed and sold millions of t-shirts. Mel Gibson ranted against Jews and became a pariah. Ilhan Omar rants against Jews and became a congresswoman. Paris Hilton got caught drunk driving and went to jail. Beto O'Rourke also got a DWI, but did no jail time and wants to go to the White House. And on and on and on it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. But we all screw up, we all make mistakes. Why do some people just shake them off and keep going, while others don't. It's a great mystery of life. But wait a minute, don't I often say there are no mysteries? The key to coming back from defeat or from any setback, career, romantic, perhaps even some physical ones, is first to have a steel-plated ego, which is often a crucial attribute that propels people to greatness in the first place. Of course, there's a fine line between having a bulletproof ego and being a sociopath. But that matters not. We're here to divine ways to come back from failure and defeat. So whether you're batshit crazy or just trying to get along, I've got your back. Self-esteem is a powerful ingredient, but so is nerve. I've delved into nerve many times in this podcast, in episode 27, Bluffing, where in ruins of Chichen Itza in the Yucatan, a guy explained to me how only a few hundred conquistadors were able to subjugate an entire nation just on the power of one ballsy bluff. I suppose nerve is the raw material, and bluffing is the, actionable product. If you can marshal nerve and then deploy it to your advantage, you can ratchet yourself into just about any situation and or bootstrap yourself from a crushing defeat. I worked with a woman who leveraged her looks, her nerve, and a fantastic bluff into a great leap forward in her career. She was blonde, good-looking, in her mid to late 20s. Not terribly pointy, but still, you would look twice. She was in middle management. She also had an active libido and had been witnessed, after hours, banging some guy on a copy machine, which certainly elevated my opinion of her. Oh, by the way, her name was Jordan, same as the Great Gatsby character. And this Jordan, even though just a regular chick from the boroughs, was adept at projecting that upper-class image of the well-bred socialite. Her wardrobe was never trendy, always classic. Pearls and pleats and black velvet ponytail bows and never an open-toed shoe. That kind of look. Now the company, which was a television outfit, was privately owned, and the owners were very straight-laced and blue-nosed and took a dim view of people getting laid on their copy machines. So Jordan knew her days with the company were numbered. Like most of us, she was living paycheck to paycheck and needed a new gig fast. The layout of the office was fairly typical for that time and place. In the middle of the floor were cubicles containing computers, phones, and drones to operate them. On the perimeter were offices with windows, affording precious daylight and city views, and doors, beautiful, heavy, opaque doors, which provided one of the most valuable commodities in any workplace, a measure of privacy. Which makes me now wonder why Jordan banged that guy in a copy machine when she had a perfectly good office with a door on it. But I digress. In each corner of the floor were the big prizes for the big earners, the corner offices. They also had doors and views that could, from some 30 stories up, be spectacular. So Jordan got herself connected with a headhunter, and of course had promoted herself a notch on her resume from manager to director, which was not an uncommon practice. If you can't bullshit on your resume, where can you? How did I know this about her resume? Well, she left a copy of it on the copy machine. Yes, that copy machine. She must have gotten word that the axe was about to fall because she suddenly went into job hunt overdrive. How do I know that? Well, because her office was right next to mine, and the walls were kind of thin. And one morning I could hear her working this headhunter on the phone, who apparently was conducting a search for a VP job at a competitor's. Jordan convinced this guy to come interview her at her current place of employment, telling him that she had to catch a flight to Chicago that afternoon, and this was the only way to make it work, and would he be a dear, dear, yada, yada, yada. Presto, the meeting was set for 2 p.m. Now, at that time, one of the guys who occupied one of those corner offices, the biggest corner office, was on vacation. Why is this relevant? You're about to find out. At 2 p.m., I hear Jordan answer her phone and say she'll meet him in reception. A few minutes later, I made damn sure to be outside my office to get a clear view of Jordan and the headhunter. Well, sure enough, here she comes, high-stepping down the hall in gabardine slacks and a form-fitting blazer and crisp white blouse, looking like the ultimate execu-chick. And alongside her is some dweeb who must be the headhunter. And the two of them go straight into that unoccupied corner office and close the door behind them. And I'm thinking, what fuckery is this? I walk closer to that corner office and look at the nameplate on the wall beside the door. You know, the ones with the plastic inserts that let everybody know that everyone is temporary. And whose name is in that slot? Jordan Grant. Holy shit, she had slipped her nameplate off her own modest office and put it in the big one and was conducting business in there in an impressive corner office, a director's office, just like it said on her bogus resume. I did a quick memory scan of that guy's office. I'd been in it a jillion times. He had pictures of his family on his desk. She must have stuffed those in a drawer earlier. Goddamn, this broad was diabolical. About 20 minutes later, the door opens, and out come Jordan and Headhunter. He's grinning from ear to ear. No, I don't think she fucked him in there, but I'm pretty sure she mind-fucked him. She was so good that as they walked past the secretary, Jordan actually said to her, "Mindy, would you check on my Chicago flight, please?" Mindy had no idea what she was talking about. But Jordan was moving so fast, it didn't matter. She escorted the headhunter to the elevator, and when she came back, she smiled at me, slid her nameplate out of the holder, went into the absent director's office, replaced his family pictures on his desk. I'd seen some slick shit before, but this was really, really impressive. In a few days, Jordan was the new vice president of station relations at a way better company for at least double her former salary. Maybe triple. I don't know if she ever banged anybody on their copy machines, but at her new salary, she could easily afford a room at the Plaza for a quickie. There were many lessons to be learned from Jordan. First, bullshit and deception are the lingua franca and the coin of the corporate and political realm. That is a stone fact. Anyone who disputes that is a rube. Second, when you have nothing to lose is when to throw caution to the wind. While Jordan was in that office with that recruiter, I recall thinking, holy shit, what if some of the real players come by and just look at her name on that door? Then what? It didn't matter. She knew she was toast anyway, so why not bet everything on one spin of the wheel? So whatever your situation is, as you contemplate rising from your own ashes like a phoenix, remember this simple axiom. You can't fall off the floor. Once you've been dumped, fired, laid off, sidelined, whatever fate has befallen you, unless you are imprisoned, the upside is a new kind of freedom. The freedom to let your next move be as bold or outrageous or deceitful as necessary, because you have nowhere to go but up. This happens all the time in Hollywood, where they invented the art of failing upwards. You see it all the time. A-list stars open in two or three consecutive bombs. Yet, they continue to land starring roles for massive sums of money. How do they do that? Because nowhere on earth are there bigger egos, bigger liars, and more outright sociopaths than right here. I've known a number of them. So if you're feeling beaten, broken, and hopeless, don't. There's always a way out and upward. Get up, get dressed, get out, put on your gabardines and Gucci's, even if they're knockoffs, and check yourself in a mirror and like what you see. Is your line of bullshit a little bit rusty? Here's how to tune it up. Start with the barista at the coffee joint. When they ask for your name, tell them it's Jordan Grant or Jay Gatsby. When you give them that fake name, you'll want to laugh out loud, and that will make you feel good. And it's a great little workout for your nerve and a buoy for your ego. Then, when you start that job hunt or boyfriend or girlfriend hunt, give yourself a promotion. You know you deserve it. Then, sometime later, swing over to the mall or whatever the highest-end stores you can find, maybe like a Cartier or a Mercedes dealer. And don't just window shop. When that salesperson says, "May I help you?" confidently say yes and point to something fabulous in that display case and try it on. Or slide behind the wheel of that S-Class sedan and ask some questions. Then check your wrist, making sure you're wearing at least a passable knockoff, and say, "You've got to catch a flight to Chicago, but you'll be back," and get their business card. These exercises will boost your self-esteem, your spirit, and your bluffing skills. They hurt no one and help you get back on your game, whatever it is. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. If you like what you just heard, drop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com and click one of the subscribe buttons. Android, Apple, Stitcher, whatever. That way you'll never miss an episode. And why not click that Patreon button too and support the show? That gets you access to many goodies, including more than 24 bonus episodes like the one just released, Love in the Hashtag MeToo Age. Whether you're single and on the prowl or blissfully married and faithful, it matters not. In this day and age, if you have a pulse and a penis, you're in danger. And so, my friends, remember, they only win if we let them win. Hang tough. And take no shit.